And welcome back in another edition of the Stripe Show podcast. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. It's a Wednesday, so you know what that means. We get back into the world of instruction and coaching. And you know, the buzz here in the modern era is distance, right? We are in the distance era. We've been talking about it on the podcast. I've had a lot of great guests, and I've been thinking about this next guest and getting him on. And he was kind enough to do it for us here this week, because let me tell you something, he knows a thing or two about distance, creating speed. In fact, I think that's really, he's one of the best at it in the world. And he joins us from just south of Tampa Bay, I believe, Lucas.
North of Tampa.
Okay. Just north of Tampa Bay. Lucas Wald, one of the top teachers in the game. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me, Travis. Yeah, north of Tampa, Lecanto, Florida, Black Diamond Ranch is where I'm at. Beautiful place.
Nice. Nice. Well, the heat, it's coming. You know, I'm in Ponte Vedra, and it's been a nice spring. Not as humid here, but, well, 91 and humid is knocking on the door as we get into May. But we're here to talk about distance. We're here to talk about, I think, the modern game, the modern teaching, things that are happening right now that I think are very cool, you know. And there's a lot of questions that I want to ask you, but I want to start and I want to get your perception of where we are, your view of teaching today, instruction today, when it comes to movement, not so much coaching. Let's think about movement patterns here with the body to create speed. Because I know, Lucas, you have studied so many of the greats of the game. You know, you go back to the classical swing. I saw you post something of Ralph Goodall today on your Instagram. But we're talking about Sam Snead. We're talking about Ben Hogan, how these people moved. We're kind of moving back into that, aren't we? In today's era, rotational freedom, longer in nature. Let's not resist. Let's let the body move and hit it as hard as we can. How do you see it?
Yeah, so thanks for that introduction. Perfect. My sort of niche, Travis, I've gone back and looked at the best men and women swings throughout the history of the game. So if you go early 1900s, McDonald Smith, Ralph Goodall, Hogan in the 40s, Snead in the 40s, of course, Nicklaus in the 60s, 70s, Tom Watson in the 80s, Norman in the 90s, you know, back Mickey Wright, Babe Zaharias, Louis Suggs. Of course, the modern guys, Rory, DJ, Bubba Watson, Justin Thomas. So if you combine all of those powerful, dominant swings throughout the history, there are commonalities. There are key fundamental elements that all those swings possess. And so teasing out, distilling those key elements is what I'm sort of known for, and then training those elements. But we see Bryson incorporating now a lot of those elements, and he, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. He's basically taken the blueprints of a swing like Kyle Berkshire and implemented it into his own swing, a long drive guy. But, you know, I think what's interesting is the movements that Kyle Berkshire has, there's nothing new on his swing either. So that's why I posted the Ralph Goodall this morning. I don't know if you saw his feet were flying around.
Oh, yeah.
He was up on his toe at impact. He looked, looked scary similar to Justin Thomas at impact. So I think that's what's fascinating to me, is seeing some of these new guys possess some of these legendary elements, both men and women. You know, that's something that it just fires me up watching a Justin Thomas or Bryson or you know, Bubba Watson or Rory, you know, when he's playing better, for sure. But that's what excites me, and that's what I'm passionate about.
Yeah, and we went through an era there, Lucas. I think it's fair to say when I got into teaching, I think resistance was part of the vocabulary, you know, and it was like the perception was in many ways like turn the upper, not the lower. Even though like we knew the lower was turning some, right? But there wasn't a lot of change of knee flex. I think there was like a more of a need to shorten things up, in the backswing. And I think we have come out of that, and we're moving now, I think, back into a lot of the movements that you described that so many of these greats have had and so many of these long drive people have had, where it's no, we need to have a change of knee flex, you know, and we need to let things lengthen out. There's times you got to shorten people up. I get that. But let things have rotational freedom. Let them be longer in nature. I know on my lesson to you, when I teach, I'm lengthening more people out than I'm shortening up. That's for sure when it comes to the amateur game. And so there's a shift back into the game today. And I think it's healthy. You know, I think it's the healthy long-term approach.
Right. So like if you look at a Vijay Singh, Phil Mickelson, Tom Watson, Sam Snead, I mean, these are players with long fluid swings that played, you know, late in their 50s. I mean, Snead, I think, got second place in a PGA Tour event at 59. We saw what Tom Watson almost won the British Open at age 59. These are unrestricted full turns, you know, long swings, past parallel, across the line. So I think, you know, if we cannot inhibit that motion, I think Greg Rose, Travis talked about the modern swing a few years ago being designed for speed, or sorry, for accuracy. And when we add speed to that swing, it can be, we can cause injury, back injuries. And so I think this longer, unrestricted move that we're now seeing crop up, it's going to let players play into their late 40s, 50s, and still have a chance to win on tour. Like Phil Mickelson's right now, he's still competitive on the PGA Tour because of that. No, he lifts his lead hill, his hips turn. It's a free flowing set way past parallel. So I don't try to you know, restrict any move. We did I think 2019. Brandon Chamblee and I did a presentation at the Top 100 in Pinehurst, Top 100 Golf for Golf Magazine. And we put up an image of a young Ben Hogan next to Jamie Sadlowski, a long drive guy, right? And the people in the audience were just like, wow, I mean, and I broke down the similarities in those two swings at the top. But people just don't realize Ben Hogan, notably one of the best ball strikers, maybe the best of all time, was way past parallel. I mean, he looked a lot like, almost similar to Jamie Sadlowski. And that's why I use that sort of side-by-side comparison to show this guy, the best ball striker of all time, and arguably pound for pound, the longest hitter of all time, look identical. So, I mean, that was just a cool sort of metaphor for the way the game is trending now. And so, you know, you see Bryson, you see a Bubba Watson, you see, you know, I remember growing up with John Daly. I was told John Daly is just a freak. You know, it's like, wait, he's not a freak. He copied Nicklaus. So.
No, and that's a good segue into, you know, this long drive impact. Right. And I think you've been out in the forefront of that, because I know you work with a lot of long drive guys, as you do professional golfers. Harris English, you've worked with in the past, Graham McDowell, Victor Hovland, you mentioned Brandel Chamblee. We're going to get to some of those names here later on, but I want to narrow in here on some of the long drive guys. I know Eddie Fernandez, Jeff Flagg, you've been a part of that makeup, you know, for a long time because of your expertise in this. Talk about the impact of the long drive competition and these men and women. Do you think they've had on many of the things that we're talking about right now in modern instruction, right? And the pro game, the impact that these long drive people have had?
Yeah, totally. I think just with the advent of all this technology, social media, you know, we have access to so much more information now. We can go to YouTube, we can go to Instagram and see what Kyle Berkshire is doing. We can see what the training regiment looks like. We can go to YouTube and watch Jamie Sadlowski in 2008 and 9 when he won and see like, wow, you know, we know now through technology, through watching all these swings, how similar they are to many of the legends throughout the history of the game. So I think there's a huge impact. I mean, the long drive guys, the men and women, I like to say they're human lie detectors, because if they're doing something, they are physically trying to hit the ball as far as possible. So if they're doing something in their body that we can learn from, it's to help us hit it farther. So when I watch a Kyle Berkshire have this explosive up move on the backswing, I'm saying, why is he doing that? You know, is he accessing something that I need to learn from? And the reality is, yeah, he's going up, Travis, so that he can use gravity more to fall into transition. And who do we see doing that now? Bryson. Have you seen Bryson use this extension up now? He's doing that to access gravity, fall in transition, create a little bit more pressure into the lead side so that he can then back up coming into impact. and hit up on it. So I think it's a huge thing to have someone like Bryson following Kyle, having Kyle Burchard come to his house, training in Chris Como's garage. You know, he is using these mirror neurons, if you will, to imitate and emulate Berkshire. I did the same thing with Jamie Sadlowski. I mean, Jamie, 2008, 2009, 2010, he was sort of my model. Jamie was 160 pounds soaking wet and won the 2008 and 2009 world championship. And so I, being a smaller guy, I'm like, if that guy can swing 220 miles an hour and I'm swinging at the time 150 something, then I'm thinking I can at least get the 180, which I've done. But basically, I use Jamie as a model. Yeah. But now they're using Kyle and some others. But I think it's super fascinating to model the long drive. Now I think there's some elements to hit, you know, have accuracy as well. It's not just about hitting it far. Right. But you know, I think there's a blend. And I think if you look at a Hogan or a Jack Nicklaus or a Snead, you know, or some of the modern guys like Bubba or, you know, even like a Cameron Champ, you know, these guys blend the long drive elements with the ability to hit it straight as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot there to unpack. It's really good stuff. And I have spent a lot of time just watching the long drive guys as well. And I remember when I was at Golf Channel and we were doing the shows, it was kind of when all of that was really starting to take more center stage and it was being broadcast on TV and we would break the swings down and this elongation up feeling, you know, and the leg and the right side of the pelvis getting taller and the spine extending and the, you know, that movement. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I'm teaching that to someone, I would be probably done by now, you know, teaching, because, you know, people are resisting and staying down, as you know. And then as you get them to kind of elongate, they're like, damn, look at my backswing. You know, like, I've never had the club there in my life. So it's, yes, it's power, but I have found that even, I'm talking amateur game now here, I have found that it, you know, it starts to get the club kind of around them. It gives them more time to do what they want to do coming down. And all of a sudden now they're more accurate too.
Totally. So
it's kind of the double whammy, and it's fun when you can share that with someone. They're hitting it longer and straighter in the way that they're recruiting in the backswing. One thing that really bothers me, Lucas, is when, you know, you get that soapboxing in social media. The only thing that matters is impact. The backswing doesn't even matter, you know? And it's like, wait a minute, you know, like the backswing has some value here. And especially if we're trying to create some speed. And as I mentioned, even some accuracy, especially for these amateurs, I mean, getting them structured going back makes the game a hell of a lot easier coming down.
Again, like I tell this to people all the time, these moves are mutually reinforcing. If I improve the backswing, I have a better chance to improve transition. Yeah. If I improve transition, then I have a better chance to improve the impact interval. So that, I mean, we start with the backswing, and it's pretty, at this point, Travis, that's the easiest thing to correct in someone's swing is the backswing. Sure. A little bit of op move, a little thoracic extension, more hip movement, more hip internal rotation. Basically, that's just turning the sacrum towards the target on the backswing, getting the left knee behind the ball if you're a right-handed golfer, allowing the left heel to come up. We're not restricting movement. So I like to use a lot of legendary guys or girls. I'll pull up Mickey Wright or Nicklaus, you know, or Snead or Hogan, and I'll show someone, you can get into this position. You know, it's this whole adage of you're not flexible enough. I don't see that. Almost anyone, unless they've had a major injury, I'm staying with a 64-year-old right now, Tim Willis, and I swear to God, like his backswing now looks legendary. And he doesn't have all the movements coming down. Yeah. He's swinging at 105 miles an hour and he's 64. And it's like incredible. We go out and play, and I'm like, dude, you're moving like I show him. And this is the beauty of technology. We can measure this stuff. We can measure before and after. We can have, you know, TrackMan or FlightScope or Force Plates and say, Tim, this is where you were and this is where you are now. If that's what I like to use technology for, sort of a before and after, more so than teaching with club data and like your path is so far or left or right. I like to show them, quantify, you know, the before numbers and then quantify the after numbers and be like, we're moving in the right direction. And you can qualitatively see on video where you've improved.
Right. Yeah, I think our styles are very similar. Everything you said there, like in my mind, I'm like, you know, that's, yep, check. Like those are a lot of the same ways that I feel. And it's like, yeah, these people, I don't run into very many people that can't do this, you know? I mean, I just don't. And they're like, I don't think I can, well, let me try, you know? And it's like, and that's, well, you can turn your right hip, just lose a little flexion. All of a sudden, you know, now do this for me. You know, take your spine. Okay, now do that as you turn and keep your orientation. Oh, okay, yeah. And then you show them, they're like, damn. You know, that's right. Now they feel a little different, spatial awareness. You know, there's some things to get used to, but absolutely they can do it. You mentioned Berkshire. He's fascinating to me. And I just, you know, I don't know if there's a guy that I like watching hit a driver more than Kyle Berkshire in any professional or amateur or long drive. I mean, it's just incredible to watch the experience of watching him hit a driver. And you know, his impact on Bryson, of course, and Chris Cuomo, who I know you're good friends with. And Berkshire does this, I call it the Humpty Dumpty, you know, where he kind of gets his feet going back and forth, you know, and then he hits it. And I posted that on Instagram like a year ago, and it was like blew up. People loved it. I was like, try it, you know, and some people are shooting holes through it. Like that isn't, I'm like, I think we're going to a time here where there's going to be professional golfers doing that on 14 drives. I really do. I think we're going there. It's coming. Someone is going to do it and implement it, and that's the way they're going to hit their driver in professional golf to maximize speed. I'm sitting there watching LPGA, and Lydia Ko does it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I text Sean Fuller, and I was like, that's the coolest thing I've seen all year, right there. It is. She goes, that's the like Berkshire. And rips the drive in competition right down the middle. I think that's where professional golf is going. And I don't think it's long to start. You see men and women doing that 14 times in a tournament. What do you think?
Well, yeah. And again, we go back to Nicklaus or, you know, Lee Trevino, their feet were moving, Travis. They weren't stationary over the ball and they pulled the trigger quickly. So motion tends to eliminate tension too. Most amateurs stand over the ball way too long. They're too stiff. They're too rigid. So when we watched basically Berkshire moving the feet like that, it created more momentum in his swing, you know, more ground force reaction, all that stuff we can get into. But Lydia Ko, I texted her. I saw that too. And I was like, hey, Lydia, you know, did someone teach you that? And she was like, Luke, I watched Kyle Berkshire win the world championship doing that. And I tried it myself and it worked. And she said, I get about 10 to 15 yards of carry. And that's, she said, I don't do it on every drive, but if she gets on a par five, you know, and she needs to have, you know, have an iron in or something, she does that move. And she, it's a little bit of a risk, but it's worth it to hit it 20 yards farther. I think Mark, this is an interesting stat. Mark Brody put out a stat a few years ago that 20 yards of increase gives you a 0.75 strokes gained advantage per round. So over four rounds, that's what, three shots.
Yeah.
So if you can gain 20 yards, you've got a three shot advantage right away. So I think Bryson is huge into analytics and stats. Yeah. He saw stuff like that and was like, you know, if I can swing 190 in competition, then I've got more than a three-shot advantage basically on the field. And not every week, but we see him in contention dang near Travis every week. It's fun to watch him get up at Bay Hill and drive it across the water on the par five. Incredible. But he learned a lot of that stuff from Berkshire. You know, Lydia Ko is learning from it. We're all learning how to take some of these elements. I saw Berkshire, this is a quick story, in 2017, I was 16. I was with Jeff Flagg and we were at the World Championship in Oklahoma. No one knew who Kyle Berkshire was. And I walked by this young kid and I saw him swinging in the force and the ballistic movements that he had. I'm like, Jeff, who's this guy? And he said, oh, his name's Kyle. And he broke a driver shaft over the bat and it flew up in the air. And I'm like, I don't know who this Kyle kid is, but he's got the movements to dominate this sport. And no one knew. And I'm like, and a few years later, man, he is the longest. He's the longest out there. It's pretty fun to see. And it's a good swing too. It's not just, I mean, the kid can play golf. It's not just, I don't know if he can play tour golf, but you know, he hits it pretty straight and he's a plus handicap.
Yep. Yeah, he's a trip to watch. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy watching him. And Bryson, you know, he's must watch TV. You know, he really is. When he gets it going, like you can see when Bryson's confident, the speed maintains, you know, and if he feels a little off, then he'll slow down a little bit. And even Bryson, you know, slowing down is, you know, obviously way out there. But when you can tell when it's peak and it's like, man, it's almost like he can't hit it hard enough, you know, and he's just wailing on it.
Right.
So yeah, I really do. I think Berkshire has introduced something that you're going to be seeing more and more players doing. And I just thought it was awesome when Lydia did it. Now there's pitfalls here. You know, there's a couple of things here. Let me take a step back for a second, okay, because we're talking about movement and we know that can create more club head speed and what that means, the ball speed. And then there's, you know, the launch characteristics, right? And being able to hit up and maximize launch and spin. So we know that's kind of the second element of it. I kind of chuckled when Stuart Sink in his press conference says, you know, yeah, I've been working on my core and this and that. And, you know, I changed a couple things and, you know, my attack angle now is a little more up. And it's like, duh, you know, like, what have you been waiting for crying out loud? And I say that jokingly because, you know, when you start changing attack angles, yes, it can add to more distance. We know that. But when you're messing with an attack angle with a top player like a Stuart Sink or a McIlroy or whoever, like, things start to change, you know, with the body and how you're going to control the face and those kinds of things. So it can be risky, you know, from that standpoint. I don't think there's much risk, honestly, when you look at a mid handicap.
Right.
You know, I think you can just get in there and just start going. But when you have a player who maybe has been historically 1 degree down with the driver, and then you take him 2 degrees up, you know, now, you know, the spine and things can start to be a little different, and that may have a residual effect perhaps in the iron play. That's kind of what I see with Rory. I see Rory has definitely went after some distance. To me, there's some side bend there, which decreases his ability to rotate and maybe get on it a little bit with his irons. There's some pitfalls here, right? As far as like players need to be careful with. How do you address that?
Yeah, so I think it's a great topic. I think you brought up an interesting point about the iron versus driver. The way I view it is it's two different swings. If we're training for just bombing a drive, yes, we're hitting up on it 3 to 5 degrees. We're getting our pressure back to the back foot. We're on this axis of rotation from the left pec to the shoe, which is off vertical, kind of like an ice skater on ice. We're off vertical. You know, those things help, you know, not sliding, no lateral motion towards the target. You brought up Eddie Fernandez earlier. When I first started working with Eddie, he was -1 hitting down on it. And he wanted to win the world. I'm like, dude, you're not, you know, he's hitting these spinners that are up shooting. I'm like, you know, and Eddie was a good golfer too. And he kept the ball in play by doing that, but he's not going to maximize his launch angle and give himself the best chance to win with that attack angle. So when we started working on his sequencing, the byproduct was that his attack angle went from -1 to +3. I never mentioned, hey, we're going to do this so that your attack angle will go up. We changed the attack angle by changing the sequence. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was a sort of a byproduct. So that's, I thought, interesting in and of itself.
Yeah.
But there are dangers. So like with Rory, you mentioned Rory. I've gone back and looked at Rory when he was winning majors. He won the PGA by 8 shots, I think, in 2012.
Yep.
And if you go back and look at those swings when he was kind of doughy and pudgy, I mean, he's still swinging 120 miles an hour. You know, and so are close to it, right? And you know, I think he maybe got a little bit, he's come out and said that he tried to chase distance a little bit by watching what Bryson was doing.
Right.
And I think in those cases, Travis, I don't know that Rory needed to get to from 120 to 130 and hit 190 ball speed. 180, mid 180s fast enough. And you're right, he covered it more, he was less sort of extended up, he had more rotation. And with more flexion and more rotation, you have a better ability to control the club face. The more extension you have, you might create a little more speed, but you're going to lose some of the club face stability. So there is a blend there. And I think Rory had that perfect blend in 2010, 11, 12, 13. And so in my eyes, if I was coaching Rory, I would say, go back and study film when you were at the very peak of your career and winning the PGA by 8 shots. And I think if he did and had someone to sort of break down those movements, he would see that he was more bent over, more inflection, and more rotated, like you alluded to. So we can get him back to that, less extended, less sort of jumping up. I think he would find more fairways ultimately. So there are pitfalls. There are dangers for sure. And just missing distance. But I think if you do it smart, Chris Como, everything with Bryson was calculated from day one. We talked about this. It wasn't done overnight. He took a long approach. And that's the best way to do this stuff. I think people tend to want to do it now, instead of taking a more long-term approach. And that's what I encourage my students to do.
That's a really good point, because like all of a sudden you had players like Rory and Tony Finau and DJ like posting videos of them.
Yeah.
Like their top ball speed, you know, and they're just basically trying to hit it as hard as they can. They're like, well, I can do this, you know? And what's the net effect of that to the game? It does have to be calculated, right? I mean, it really does, especially at that level. Because
yes,
I mean, they are the best at what they do, and you have to protect that genius to a certain degree. So, with all that said, that's what makes it even more fascinating with Bryson is the risk involved, and he's pulled it off. You know, I mean, he's pulled it off. Now, there's things that I'm sure he's trying to tighten up in the approach game and those kinds of things. But he's able to he's gotten himself to a point so much faster.
Right.
And, you know, let's face it, and still play at a very high level and winning the U.S. Open in dominant form that he did. So it's a fascinating story, one that's changing the game in many, many ways.
It makes you wonder what the honey hole number is for ball speed. And I think that's going to be sort of approached in the future. Of whether it's 195 or 198 or 190, there's a point where if you're off just a little bit, you know, you can hit spray some shots. And I think Bryson is right on sort of the pinnacle of finding that honey hole spot to where if it's 188, 192, whatever it is, I mean, if you're flying at 340, then I mean, you really don't need any more than that. And so I would encourage people chasing, especially my tour pros. You mentioned GMAC earlier, Graham McDowell. GMAC is not going to swing 190. You know, it's just it's not in the cards. But if we can maximize sort of his efficiency to say, this is your peak. In training, we take the governor off. Okay. In training, we go all out. And that's what you see Bryson doing, hitting 212, 215 in training. So that when he pulls back and hits fairways, he's increased his average up to say, you know, 195 he's comfortable at, even though he can go 212. So that's what I like to do with players in practice is to take the governor off so that when you go play, you fall back to your baseline and ultimately get the baseline a little higher than it was. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's
no, it does. The governor is a real, real thing. You know, that internal governor and saying, nope, we're not going to swing this fast, right? But this is where we're in control. And then you just push through that and push through that. And pretty soon, you know, like you're running downhill as fast as you ever have.
Totally.
And so the word governor comes out a lot with students and trying to get them to push through and swing it faster in the way that they're recruiting.
And I see speaking of governor, I was asked this question a few years back. The biggest fault I see with amateurs wanting to go faster, the backswings are usually too slow. That's something that I see.
Okay.
It's real slow, and then they speed up and transition. Whereas what I try to get people to do is have a faster backswing, a more explosive shoot. And Nicholas said the first 2 feet of the backswing, he knew if it was going to be a good shot or not. It's in his book. So, I mean, get the club head moving. Use your core. Generate some speed right off the start. Don't be all safe and calculated. You know, that's something that people can improve quickly when we speed up the backswing. My good buddy, John Novosel, Tour Tempo, we do a lot of tones. We play tones to get people speed up when we do our clinics to hear the sound of bump, 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 to have like sort of this audible sensation of what it feels like to get up fast. And when they realize just how fast Rory is to get to the top, yeah. Bryson, they're like, wow. I mean, it looks smooth in person, but it's really pretty dynamic and really explosive to get to the top in that amount of time. And people can do it. They just have been taught over the years, you've got to be slow and steady so that you can hit it straight. And we're like, yeah. If you can free up and be more athletic, swing faster to the top in general, you tend to hit it farther and straighter. And you were saying that too about the back. Yeah. When you see your students really load, yeah. they might go past parallel, but you don't see them any sort of more sporadic than you did before when they're trying to be safe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the risk is, it's all worth it, for the amateurs. So I don't feel like I can play golf like that, but you can, the risk is worth it. Trust me, in going through this, let's finish up with GMAT, 41 years of age. I know you spent some time with him through the winter, early spring. Here's a guy that, historically hits it 283 off the tee, somewhere in there. And he's looking at this going, my God, kids are hitting it 320, that's a big mountain for someone like a McDowell who's had the career that he has, US Open winner. And in this modern era, right, of length, and he's like, man, and like so many, I gotta get after it. Like I gotta figure out how to get 10, 15, maybe 20. I know you guys have spent some time. Talk about maybe if you can, the cliff notes of that plan over the last few months.
Yeah. So over the winter, GMAC was topping out. I mean, he was swinging 164-ish ball speed, 165. Just like what we alluded to earlier, Travis, we got a deeper hip turn. I mean, GMAC in 2010 had a huge right hip internal rotation, huge hip turn. He sucked the club inside. He had a pretty big shoulder turn, but not a lot of length to the backswing. So I encouraged him to let it go a little bit longer at the top, get back to the pivot that got him to the top of the backswing in 2010. And then we eliminated a little bit lateral movement and allowed him to rotate quicker. And dude, he topped out 175. We topped out at Lake Nona. He hit 175 a couple times, 174. Wow. So he was up about 10 miles per hour. And that, is he going to go 190? No. But if he can, again, take the governor off, get to 175, 176 in training, then he can, hopefully cruise at lower 170s. And that was our goal. And he's getting there, I think. But, as this, it's hard mm-hmm. to take that to the golf course when you have a card in your pocket. But, again, once 170s, if you can go mid 170s, we see Victor Hovland, who I've worked with. Victor, great young player, top 15 in the world now. And he's 175, 178. Mm-hmm. He can get to 180, which I've seen him do. But he again cruises mid 170. So you don't have to be 190 right now. With this equipment, the ball will go. If you can get in the 170s, I'm telling this to young tour players, even some of the Korn Ferry guys that they come to me, they ask me to watch their swing. If you're in the 170s and you have good club face stability, that's fast enough. You don't have to be Bryson speed to compete at the highest level in this game. And so GMAT, that I encouraged him to say, if you can get in the 170s with these new speed elements that we've implemented, GMAT, with your iron play, your club face stability, and your putting, get it done. And so hopefully we had an impact on
well, it's I kind of feel for those guys, I mean, in many ways, they're great players, Graham McDowell and Brian Gay and, even Lee Westwood and like these guys, who in their 40s now, right. And they're seeing this new era of, in many ways, it's a distance era. I mean, it's exploded here, and Bryson's impact and, they're like, damn, I gotta do something.
Yeah, Stuart Sink. What was he? 175 ball speed I saw last. Yeah. It's like,
yeah, he was cruising
back in the day. I looked up his average. He was averaging 265 off the tee, and now he's over 300. And I think
he was cruising.
some technology, really, you know, the ball, the club, and the collision from the ball and club. But basically, you know, if you can add a few speed elements with this equipment and you've got a pretty good swing, you can go mid 170s pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, I know, you know, we could talk forever about the full swing and distance, but I know, you know, a thing or two about short game and putting as well. And you just did a series with Brad Faxon. Tell the audience about it.
Yeah. So I took on learning the key elements of pitching, chipping, putting, bunker play. And I put a little series out on the website, lucaswallgolf.com. And Faxon joined me, dear friend of mine, talked candidly about probably 30 minutes, 28 minutes, I think exactly, but gave drills out and talked about what he felt in his pre-shot routine, warming up, a couple of key drills, fundamentals that he used throughout his career. So I highly recommend that, to go to that, get that series, because Brad, it's a lot of wisdom that he shares, Travis, in that little putting segment. And also, you know, some of the pitching and chipping motions that I talk about in the series, I've learned from Faxon. I've learned from watching Brett Rumford on Instagram. I've learned from watching Seve. You know, I broke this stuff down to still the key fundamental elements on chipping, pitching, and putting. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the series. And I have a full swing version on there too, a how-to full swing and a how-to short game. So both of those are, I think it's valuable for your viewers to go pick up.
And it's lucaswald.com, right?
LucasWaldGolf.com.
LucasWaldGolf.com. And your Instagram as well is for the viewers, Instagram.
At Walt Lucas.
Okay.
Yeah. At Walt.
Excellent. Well, we're going to do this again. I appreciate your time. I know you're busy, but this is it's good discussion. Love where things are going. Love what you're doing. I follow you, and we'll chat again soon. Good. Tell Grand we're pulling for him. I'm a big McDowell fan. Lake Nona is one of my favorite golf courses in the country. Every time I go down there, I see him grinding. He's great.
It's the best. By the way, what's your ball speed up to?
My ball speed, you know, I can get into 170, low 170s. Nice. Well, yeah. I gotta get myself going though. You know,
Sure.
I gotta get amped up and excited. You know, Lucas, I'll finish with this. I've said many times, if I had to go back and do it all over again with my own swing, I think what I would, there's probably a few things I would do. One is I would definitely get a change in knee flex. I mean, I am the poster child of turn the upper and resist with the right knee. I mean, like, that's the way I did it, you know, and was taught, as many of us were. So I really, if you watch my swing now, you see much more of it, but I got to really get after it. You know, like, I got to really get myself going to get my legs going.
Yeah.
And the second thing is I would have been way more, you know, way more momentum early and moving and trying to get that momentum going early to the top of the swing.
Yeah.
Cause I was, you know, way too still and deliberate. Mm. So like, those are the things that I would have changed going back, and all that I think would have got me going back deeper and faster and the more loaded and more explosive coming down. And those are the things that I work on right now, Lucas. Like, that's exactly what I work on. And when I do that and I feel good, I feel loaded, I feel like, okay, I don't feel out of control anymore, but I feel less control. But it's a good feeling. And I'm just letting it release, and I'm not trying to steer it down there. And my ball speed just goes way up. I mean, that's when I start feeling like I get into that low, high 160s, low 170s pretty consistent.
Yeah. You see that little motion you talked about, that trigger or that movement before you go back. I mean, it's athletic. It's like a shooting a free throw. You don't see Curry just sit there and be still. He's moving, feet are in motion, or Jordan or Roger Federer serving a tennis ball. He's moving. There's athletic. And that's what Brad talks about, even in putting. Like, Brad, his fingers are moving on the grip. His feet, they're not moving up and down, but there's toe wiggle, right?
Yeah.
He's not sort of trying to be stiff and robotic. And so the same thing in putting, chipping, full swing, be an athlete. You know, don't censor movement. And you experience it yourself. When you do that, you go way up in speeds.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And even short game too, just having that, just a little shuffle and just and kind of going, rather than starting so stagnant and then trying to produce the motion. I think that momentum and flow kind of goes through my entire game. And I'm much more instinctive and decisive and just kind of letting my technique go and letting it, and, you know, and reacting to that rather than trying to steer it back, you know, and guide it through or whatever, where you feel like now I'm not even turning at all in the full swing. You know, it's like, it's just too rigid.
I love it.
All right, buddy.
Awesome, Travis.
Thank you, Lucas. Great talk. We'll do it again, man.
Thanks for having me.
Let's take a second to talk about the guys and girls over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation of having the most cutting-edge technology in their golf balls that the industry has seen in quite some time. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is changing the script of golf technology through the perimeter-weighted designs, use of high-density particles, and even a nano-transitional layer in their latest creation, which offers players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course and extreme velocity off the tee. They already have their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, but the new Vero X1 is the highest performance ball to date. With their full suite of golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.